on SJR 35 relating to Leadership Commission on Healthcare Costs. Judy?
This measure creates the Leadership Commission on Healthcare Costs. The commission is composed of the Senate President, Senate Majority, and Minority Leaders, Speaker of the House, House Majority, House Minority Leader, or their designees. Legislative Administrator will staff the commission. And the commission is charged with developing and distributing the State of Oregon Healthcare Cost Index. The commission is charged with establishing categories of healthcare services, identifying factors contributing to the cost of healthcare by category for use in the index, and they are also directed to make recommendations to the next legislative assembly on how the healthcare cost index should be updated and distributed on an annual basis. We do have a fiscal statement issued, but we think the fiscal is indeterminate. It would depend on who we hire as a contractor and how much the contractor has to do. And whether we can see back on some other things.
Mm-hmm. Any questions of Legislative Fiscal Officer?
Madam Chair, if I could just make a comment.
Your teeth, you need to get better teeth.
Yeah. Okay.
You need?
I spit in yours too.
Oh, this committee is.
I noticed that it indicates that on the last line of the staff measure summary there under what the bill does, the bill is effective January 1st, 2002 and sets no sunset for the commission. However, line 19 of the bill says that they will give a report on page 1. The commission shall recommend to the 72nd Legislative Assembly methods to do various kinds of things. So that, in effect, prescribes a sunset, does it not? So it doesn't need to be an actual sunset in the bill when they're making a recommendation to a next legislator or a certain legislative session.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any further questions for the LFO? If not, we have some folks that would like to testify. Lisa, AOI, would you like to come on up? And is anyone else coming up with you? Or
yes.
Dave, come on up. Dewey. Lisa, are you going to begin first?
Yes, okay. Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and we're here today in support of SJR 35. And I just wanted to briefly touch on a few points of why we're supporting this. As many of you know, the cost of health insurance is increasing drastically. And we have a health purchasing co-op that AOI formed for our smaller members, 2 to 50 employees, to try and assist them on finding affordable products with a good level of coverage. And even within our own plan, and we have several partners, Kaiser Permanente, ODS, Willamette Dental, and Providence Health Plans. And even within our own plan, we've seen cost increases that were very significant. For July 1 renewals, which are rapidly approaching, we're looking at, depending on where in the state you're located, 19 to 50% increases throughout the state. The other thing that is of concern is that if you get outside of basically the Portland area, managed care is more difficult to find today. And also what's of significance, we believe, is that family premiums for family coverage are running $500 to $700, and we've seen policies as high as $900 to $1,000 for family coverage. And in light of these increased costs, an employer has few choices. One is to discontinue coverage because it's simply cost prohibitive. The other one would be to increase the employee's contribution and also increase their co-pays. And the other thing, and sometimes this is done in combination, is to decrease benefits. And the problem is that if you increase the employee's contribution, as you well know, at some point, if it becomes cost prohibitive for the employer, it becomes cost prohibitive for the employee as well. So sometimes what we're concerned about is that the employee will still have his coverage. Perhaps the employer is paying 100% of his, but we don't want to see him dropping the dependents coverage. And we think that SJR 35 gives the legislature some tools to look at instead of looking at the piecemeal effect of benefits. We'll give a framework or a guideline for when you're considering different pieces of mandate type coverage. It gives you a framework rather than having it be done by each person's kind of advocating for the benefit that they see a need for. So we're supportive of SGR 35 and hope you will support it too.
Thank you, Lisa. Any questions of Lisa?
Madam Chair, I just have a question of each of them, and that would be, you know, what specifically do you anticipate the bill would do to reduce health care costs?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not sure that it would do specifically reduce the cost. What I think it would do would be give you the tools here at the legislature to make some decisions as to benefit the appropriateness.
I guess what I'm looking for is not to just identify, you know, something that's increasing. I mean, that's a given. I mean, I'm an accountant, and we do great Scrivener's issues of scribing history, and that's I'd like to know what we can do to maybe reduce health care costs or at least control them within the state and how this may help us. So
I see Dave and John both moving forward, and Mike can't move any further forward because he can't get through. So, Dave, why don't you go ahead and if you want to introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, Dave Fiskun, representing Providence Health System as well as Pacific here of Oregon. Representative Butler, I believe, has put his finger on a very important issue, and it's part of the background for the genesis of this SJR 35, and I'll go into that in just a moment. But I don't think this bill, this proposal, this resolution on itself reduces anything. I think what it does is provide you as legislature with far better information than you now have about what's driving health care costs in this state. This resolution is designed to provide you with an independent source of information that's not produced by any of us at this table necessarily. It's produced by someone engaged to work for the commission to produce a better set of data for you to make judgments about the many bills you consider every session, which would have one effect or another on health care costs, either probably, frankly, to increase them or conceivably to decrease them, but at least it gives you a better source of data. I just want to add a brief comment about the background of this. A number of us at this table and others in this building worked with Senator Durfler early in this session to prepare this legislation. Among other pieces of health care legislation the senator and others were interested in, and I think what we identified was the lack of this kind of data from an independent source that would have the appearance of being unbiased to you who looked at the data it produced. And I think our concern as part of the healthcare industry in this state is that cost drivers are often beneath the surface and not well understood by you and others as you make decisions that affect healthcare costs in this state. What's driving healthcare costs? What's the combination of pharmaceuticals, provider payments, utilization, the marketplace correction from the past as HMOs for a while drove down costs and now, as Lisa has described, costs going up? And, in fact, then what's the effect of mandates that you consider for increased benefit levels, increased provider contracts, whatever the pieces of legislation are that you consider? And each session, there are usually, depending on how you count them, 25 to 50 bills that would mandate health insurers to do something or another relative to benefits or contractors. And so I think the gap that we all identified in cooperation with Senator Durfler was for better data for you to make better decisions. John,
Dave, you didn't leave one word in the English language out of that statement, so I don't know what I could add.
John, would you like to identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I would simply state that, for the record, that we are in a health care crisis. These costs, whether it's the Oregon Health Plan or commercial insurance coverage, cannot continue to escalate at the rate it's escalating and cover the number of people that's being covered today. At my office, starting July 1, for myself, my family, and one employee who is single, our premium will be $14,000 this next year. My deductible is $1,000 for myself and my family. my employees is $250. So, you know, that's doubled in not too many years. And as a result of that, the crisis is not just with the Oregon Health Plan. It's going to be with all of us. An article recently in one of the newspapers indicated that retirements are at an all-time low. The most significant reason given was the inability for people to pay their own health insurance. So they can't leave work. People are stuck in jobs that they don't like. They're just doing them so they can keep their health coverage. This is one step at trying to identify the underlying cost drivers in healthcare. We can come here and say, right now, pharmaceuticals are increasing rapidly. This is increasing rapidly. But the combination will vary on health plan to health plan. The Oregon Health Plan could be different than the rest of commercial insurance. But what is driving these costs specific to Oregon in the entire universe, which could be different than any subset of that universe? And so this is an attempt to simply get that baseline established and see if it's possible to index it and keep it up to date.
Madam Chair, just one question.
Representative Butler.
Before some of us came into the room, or some of the rest of the members of the committee, I had an opportunity to just briefly visit with staff, and we've heard in this committee regarding the Public Employee Benefit Board that they do an annual contract study of the coverage which are provided to the public employees. This would be a study in addition to what we presently are doing through the PEB board. And do I understand that OMAP also does a biennial study? And is that something that we could pivot off of in this particular study?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, I believe that's one of the things this commission could look at is what is being done, and instead of reinventing the wheel, how can those bases of those studies be used to expand and get a broader sampling of the universe in terms of those study factors. So yeah, I think those could be used as indices, and or those could be actually influenced by what comes up here. I think a leadership group with this level of leadership being involved could attract a lot of think tank activity that would not necessarily cost money. Many of these think tanks are looking for situations like this to actually apply their trade, and that is, how would you go about this, and how could you do it at the least possible cost?
Thank you very much. I appreciate your sensitivity to cost, because that's a driving factor for you with the $14,000 premium that you're paying, John, and certainly it's a driving factor for the state. But I guess my concern is that you know, rather than just to be able to identify costs, we need to be able to identify, you know, how we can better provide the services and be able to determine how we can scope in on the services that we would like to provide and see that they're provided. So those are still my concerns, whether or not we can team along with someone else and still keep a study independent, and then what we can do to maybe within the scope of that study actually identify ways that we may be able to retain the costs contain the costs, I guess, that we're going to be experiencing.
Madam Chair, I might also say in response to Representative Butler's comments that SCR 35 does allow for the receipt of money from outside sources, so that if application could be made to foundations that have health care as a concern, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, many others, that might actually make contributions to a an effort like this.
Representative Johnson. Thank you. I have several questions. I guess the first one is, and I'm drawing on my background in the foundation world, the foundation that immediately came to mind when I heard you just make your comment that's local is Murdoch. And one of the things that might be really useful is to at least vet this concept past the Murdoch staff. They have full-time professional staff to at least test out the concept. It's been my experience that that staff is very rigorous in what they will and won't fund, and given that it's one of the largest foundations in the Pacific Northwest, it might be useful to at least give it a try to see what their reaction is. Because when I listened to your presentation, and admittedly this is the first that I've heard of this, several things popped into my mind. The first one is the mix of the group made up of legislators. And as I recall, part of the attraction of the health plan when it was pulled together was the diversity of the folks that were at the table. And I have a concern that with only legislators at the table trying to contract with an outside firm, how will the competing health care systems or the competing health interests in the state find that this kind of a mix has any integrity if their interest isn't at the table from the outset?
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Dewey, representing ODS. You're very fortunate. I have a meeting with Senator Nelson at 9 o'clock, and Murphy's Law works, and if I'm late, he's on time. And if I'm early, he's not. So I'm going to step out, but I think I'll do this very quickly, Representative Johnson, and the others can answer it. Obviously, we support it. Representative Butler, I think you're right. It probably should be broadened to look at options, and I think that's important, not just what's happening, but what can you do and what other states and private parties are doing. To get all the interest at the table, it would be a very big table. My view of the world is this, that because we have term limits, it's very difficult for legislators to get in tune with health care issues because they are complex issues. That's why I'd like to see legislators at the table who are going to be dealing with these issues, because they're not going to go away. There are so many competing interests, dentists, optometrists, ophthalmologists, it goes on and on and on. That's why we think legislators are better suited to be at the table.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, thanks, Mike. I just want to add a quick comment there that those of us who were in on the developmental stage of SJR 35 made what I think we considered to be, as I reflect on it a few months ago, an intentional decision not to have this be a, quote, representative, unquote, group drawing participants from many sectors. To preserve the aura of or the impression of independence, the high-level legislative control was something we were seeking by this membership. Obviously, those of us who represent interests who are affected by or involved in the healthcare cost debate would consider this to be a very important entity to relate to deal with, to understand attendance meetings, to try to influence its processes. But as a very conscious effort on our part, at least in the proposal stage of SJR 35, we didn't set out to propose it to be a representative group of having certain members from either geography, discipline, medical practitioner areas, or health systems, or health plans, or hospitals, or any of that. We decided to have it propose it to you as a legislative-driven entity.
Johnson. Intellectually, I understand you. Common sense tells me that what happens if this group picks the XYZ consulting firm whose interests are absolutely inimical to the Providence system? How good a program is this at that point, from your perspective?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, Providence's perception would be that this is, in fact, an independent entity that consists of legislative leadership, and we would not attempt to influence in any subversive way its processes. We think it's important for the legislature to have the best possible information beneath the surface about what's driving healthcare costs, because if you're in my role as a person who testifies on the bills before this legislative session, it's very difficult to pull out effectively for legislators data about what is really driving healthcare costs as various proposals, well-intentioned as they are, come before you from various interest groups, including my own. I think this gives you, as legislators, an independent source of information at a high level, and I think that overrides, for me at least, Representative Johnson, every other concern that your comments have suggested.
And believe me, I'm not saying anything pejorative about the Sisters of Providence who contribute mightily to the health of the state, but as a freshman, I have been in receipt of a number of studies that I'm sure were commissioned in well-intentioned ways by prior legislatures, and they're in a huge stack up in my office. I'm trying to translate a study that, while I think Mr. Powell's observation that this could be provided by a think tank for free is a noble idea, but absolutely out of touch with how these kind of studies come into being. How to take a $150,000 effort that is headed up by legislators and translate it into a usable tool for the legislature, where there are folks who are probably concerned with health care costs but are not as conversant in the issue. How do you end up with a practical tool?
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, first to the point about the think tank, I believe my comments did not indicate that I thought the think tank could complete this study. I think what I said was that the think tank could help set out the parameters of how this study could actually be conducted.
I apologize, I didn't understand.
And then other foundations and that sort of thing may help in the funding, because the bill, this SJR does allow for private contributions to help fund the study. To put legislative leadership, you're absolutely right. There's study after study. There's interim committee after interim committee. And one of the decisions made in SJR 35 was to make this somewhat unique. I don't think I've seen a study. Most studies report to the Senate President and the Speaker of the House. I think in order to get people's attention, one, and two, to highlight the importance of this issue, I think 12 months from now, people are going to see this particular issue as one of the most important issues facing the state. I think this allows the legislature to be in charge of something that and ahead of that curve a little bit, so that they can honestly say, we understood this was going to be a problem. We are making every effort we can to get a basis of data from which to operate on into the future. And in terms of it being a useful tool, I think the somewhat uniqueness of this approach is indicative of what we hope will turn out to be a useful tool. Because I don't know if this is being done anywhere. It is an attempt to give a baseline or a set of data, almost like you use here in the Ways and Means Committee, looking at the past budget, what inflation factors are applied to current service levels, that sort of thing. What's happening in healthcare in the same way? How can we go back and look 5 years ago, what was happening with utilization for maternity, for example? What is maternity costing in the healthcare system? And many, many purchasers, including unions, who are looking at healthcare right now are starting to wonder some of those questions. Is there an area, excuse me, I'm not that emotional about this particular religion, trust me. But many people are asking this question, but there is just no underlying data from which to base those judgments on going forward.
If I could, Madam Chair, my name is Peggy Annett, representing Health Insurance Association of America. I think a couple of points are relevant.
Thank you very much.
One is that what we realized, as those of us who have tracked these issues from session to session, is that there's a much better understanding of cost patterns in workers' comp than there is in healthcare. And we're trying to get to a point where we have a common understanding. We are repeatedly asked, what is driving healthcare costs. And even though we have what we consider to be good information, there is just not that level of basic understanding that allows people to make any progress in terms of dealing with those issues. That's what, you know, we're hoping that this type of a process will accomplish. The other thing, in response to the participation, we all know that in healthcare it is a very public process, and so I really have no doubt that there will be a high level of engagement by all interested parties, because the scope of folks that is actually affected by this, of course, is everyone. And so I'm not concerned. I think clearly that the commission itself has the ability to set up, you know, a participation process, and certainly it's going to be a public process in terms of the debate that goes on with different factors. So I can't say that I'm concerned that there will be a lack of involvement in that from that standpoint.
Representative Johnson. In looking at the composition of your commission, and I think John, one of you made a great case for why it ought to have this high level imprimatur on it. The thing that is worrisome to me is looking at this composition, who of these folks under term limits, though, would be around to impart the information? You're going to create some experts in this area that one would hope would be available to counsel and guide their colleagues in trying to figure out how to understand the findings, as well as how to translate the findings into something that translates onto the ground for your insurance, and I'm struggling to keep insurance for my employees back home. The expertise will walk out the door.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, and hopefully this, while the leadership would be named to this specific commission, there would be nothing prohibiting them from naming subcommittees of legislators, a variety of legislators in assistance and being of assistance on this in this effort. But hopefully, at least with the majority leaders and those who are going to have at least another term, I think there is some carryover in this makeup to begin with. Secondly, if you create a tool that is practical enough, then this tool will be the driver, and personalities will not have to be the driver. And again, I could liken it somewhat to the process used down here. Hopefully, that's the way this process works down here. Certain fiscal tools are used in developing the information you use. Hopefully, the staff is not taking their personal opinion and twisting things in such a way on different issues to lead you to a certain conclusion, but providing you with information and data and policy decisions that you make. Hopefully, this kind of a tool can be the same into the future, and it won't matter necessarily who is on the commission, but this tool would be available to provide data and information and be improved over time.
Further discussion, Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, I think that's correct. I think Mr. Powell has a good answer there. The leadership members may appoint a designee to serve in their place, and that designee would not necessarily be another legislator. It might be, but it could be someone that could carry over, just as a governor's appointment carries over from session to session. I think this is a good bill. I'm prepared to vote on it.
Again, who's at the table strikes me as almost everything. And what my colleague just said, where a designee could show up, I think you've got to have some protections that the designees, and again, I'm just going to pick on the sisters, that suddenly you didn't have four of the folks as designees be allied with a particular healthcare system or a particular practice segment. I think you've got to insulate very carefully who's at the table.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I wouldn't argue with that, and I think where we are coming from, at least where I'm coming from this morning, is that we would trust the leadership of this enterprise to put it together in a way that was defensible and reliable and as unbiased as possible. I think the bottom line for me is that you as a legislature need an independently produced source of information, however you may rely on existing data, existing studies, federal information, state-produced information for the Oregon Health Plan, information produced by the clients I represent, information produced as the first Senate hearing on this bill suggested from the Mercer Consulting Organization, for example, which has good data on what's driving healthcare costs. I think the bottom line is you need a high-level independent source of data that an entity like this would provide, and my clients are willing to go on record very strongly in favor of this and wouldn't see chances for there to be mischief or a skewing of the data or misrepresentation in terms of the complement of those who serve on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to believe there's been studies like this conducted by think tanks, maybe at the level, other organizations. Are you suggesting there's something that's uniquely valuable that would come out of this study that's not currently available in terms of other studies that have been conducted? And if so, why?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I think that the studies that have been conducted and are conducted, many of them have either regional or national implications, and it is difficult to isolate out of that data. You can always take Oregon's 1% of the population and apply factors like that and come up with some number. But to actually have someone look at what tools are available, and in fact I did ask this very question to Dr. John Santa, who's now at the health policy office here. I asked him if this was indeed doable in terms of being Oregon specific, and he thought that indeed it was. But in direct answer to your question, outside of the data that's collected by insurers and the like, there is nobody aggregating Oregon specific data to come to cost drivers and that sort of thing. It's all extrapolated from data collected by the federal government or some other agency. And whenever you rely on data like that without somebody using a scientific method to look through that data, it's going to be subject to finger pointing and this sort of thing. Hopefully what this would do is apply a scientific method of study to this approach and come up with good baseline data specific to Oregon.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative.
What reason do we have to believe that Oregon would be significantly different than the national factors relative to health care costs and mandates and the imposition of additional costs through mandates? I mean, what statistical evidence do we have to believe that Oregon would be significant?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, at least the West Coast is substantially different than the rest of the nation. For example, hospital costs here are much lower than they are in the East Coast. In fact, most health care costs are much lower here than elsewhere. Oregon, until about 2 years ago, had more managed care than much of the rest of the country, including California. That has changed dramatically over the last couple of years. But there are differences. The way we handle the Medicaid program here means certain institutions get paid for in place of shifting that cost onto others in different mechanisms. So there are some differences. Clearly, pharmaceutical, different kinds of technologies would apply nationally for the most part. Other than, for example, I've heard physicians who served in this body indicate that they do believe that certain practitioners follow protocols here better than they do in other jurisdictions. That is, proven protocols for certain diseases and things like that, as opposed to spending more on different treatments. So, again, no one is trying to gather data for the purpose of establishing a baseline.
The other studies are for other reasons, following financial patterns or projecting costs to the federal government or something like that, as opposed to doing specifically what this study hopes to do, not only for the legislature but for the general public. How are we utilizing healthcare? Why are we using more healthcare today than we did a short time ago? And particularly in what fields are we doing this? And because the general public needs to enter this discussion as well. I mean, it's their decisions in large part that drive a lot of these costs. Now, they may be driven by advertising, they may be driven by a whole lot of other factors, but they need to understand some of these issues as well.
Chair Clark.
Follow-up. Go ahead, Peggy.
Representative Witt, a couple of specific cases. For example, in terms of the current estimates of the uninsureds in Oregon, every time you look at a report generated by the state, they're using information from the Population Center Study Center at Portland State, and they note the deviation from the federal census numbers. The federal census numbers show a higher number of uninsureds in Oregon than from the Portland State study, and it is an Oregon-specific design study. So we do have differences like that that we already know exist, and so we find the locally developed information more credible. The other hope that I would have, at least, is that you wouldn't have the lag time in terms of identifying the trends. Most of the data that I look at in terms of studies, we're looking at 3 and 4 years, and we know that particularly when you're looking at a biennial budget cycle, that kind of a lag time is problematic. So hopefully there could get some sort of a handle or some sort of better feeling will be developed in looking at what the emerging trends are.
Representative Witt, follow up.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. This issue of designees, you know, I listened to the answers saying that this was unique because this study group is going to consist of leadership, but then we have this opportunity to appoint designees. And the designees, there's no restriction as to who can be designees. So, you know, I'm failing to understand the uniqueness of this study consisting of leadership when we have this open-ended designee who can replace someone who's in leadership, and is not even another member of the legislature. It could be someone from a particular private party or interest group. So if you reconcile this claim that was made as unique as a consistent leadership, then we have this open-ended opportunity to appoint a designee that could come from anywhere.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Witt, the design and the hope is that the legislative leadership will take this very, very seriously and be directly involved in at least the initial development of a work plan. And I think the resolution speaks specifically to a work plan. And then in terms of their ability or their desire to either bring somebody on, as Representative Johnson was indicating, members who have more duration left in their term limits, some other expertise that they may think is desirable to have on board to fit their particular scheduling. They may not be able to meet at every meeting. So I think in many instances when you have people designated by their office, there is opportunity to have a designee. But we think that this issue is big enough and understood enough by the leadership that they will take this extremely seriously.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I took that sentence, a member may appoint a designee to serve in the member's place, as a more neutral phrase, simply to recognize the scheduling issue, and I'm not meaning to argue with you when I suggest that, as much as to say that the reality is if you're the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, you may not be able to make all the meetings. And so, frankly, in developing this concept, that's how I took that phrase. I think John's point is right. The virtue of this approach is to shine the spotlight on costs so you have, as legislators, better information to consider the hundreds of health care bills you consider every session, for example. There's a public benefit, too, to the work of this group, as the spotlight has shined on costs in Oregon as those exist. And as someone who testifies before you on bill after bill each session dealing with health care issues, one of my frustrations is that in some settings it's very difficult to raise issues of costs credibly as various well-intentioned proposals are raised, including perhaps even ones that my clients raise. And so to get back to your point, Representative Witt, I took that phrase as a more neutral one relative to simply the scheduling issues that would confront any leader in this building who couldn't perhaps make every meeting.
Thank you, Dave. I have Representative Johnson and Representative Hayden.
Two thoughts on this. I'm aware of some other boards that are organizing and spending an enormous amount of time figuring out what their mission is and what they're doing, how to pull together. They've got facilitators in teaching them how to do that which they were formed to do. I don't see any particular safeguards in here that crisply focus what this commission is supposed to be doing without the temptation to get into organizational scope creep until suddenly the organizing has sucked up all of the available resources and you still are $150,000 away from a report. And maybe you can respond to that, and then I have one other question.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, again, I think it was written somewhat delicately around that issue. While it does talk very specifically about indexes and ratios and that sort of thing, again, it's written in such a way that the scope can be determined, again, with the input of other people who do these kinds of studies, both in terms of what is practical, what is doable under a specific budget figure, for example, so that it doesn't say you have to do A, B, C, and D, but it does, I think, talk very specifically about what the goal of this group would be, and that is to come back with a product that could be updated to examine specific areas of healthcare and their costs.
And here's my last question. In order for this to be meaningful, this report, to really identify trends, to look at what's driving costs in an area that by anybody's standard are breathtaking, you're going to be delving into some pretty proprietary areas, I would assume. I sat on Representative Witt's committee where we had questions about insurance companies' proprietary information. Where is there in this concept, the implicit buy-off, that you are going to have access to the kind of data that may in some industry sectors be considered proprietary, that is absolutely essential to help answer the question of what's driving the costs? And I don't see anything that suggests that you will have access to industry information at a level that you need it, which may not always come in the most flattering light.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, providers and insurers and others in the healthcare arena are frequently given the opportunity to exchange data in such a manner as to make it not identifiable to their specific organization. And I would think any study like this obviously would have to be designed in that manner, so that data could be accumulated in such a manner as not to be identifiable. I know, I think the Hospital Association, for example, collects certain data so that it's transferred in bulk so that it doesn't come in units so that somebody could identify the biggest hospital, for example. And so I think in the healthcare arena, more than probably any where you'd run into proprietary information, there's an exchange of a lot of data already. And it can be done in such a way as to black out the identity of the parties.
I guess the last question is, in a study of this magnitude, the answer may not be pretty. The answer may say hospitals charge too much, or insurance companies are profiting, or how's everybody prepared to deal with an outcome that isn't a vanilla outcome?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't think this particular study would lead to those conclusions. Now, they may lead to somebody saying, why are these costs going up at this rate over time? And let's look more closely at this particular area. It may be technology, it may be pharmaceuticals, it may be why are we spending this much and not doing something about it as a society? It may lead to those sorts of things. I think that the bottom line is, how do we know exactly what to examine and where to examine if we do not have something that has a historical basis to it that we can look back to? Because if you get the parties together, it's, well, this was a unique circumstances because of blah, 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 blah. Nobody knows about 4 years ago. And again, I don't think the study is going to bring to the legislature an immediate solution to this whole array of problems, but rather a data bank that can, again, be used over time to make some sound judgments and where you should spend your time looking, as opposed to making judgments based on media, who got the best spin doctor to spin something on ABC News, which just chokes me about every night I turn it on.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I think what this really says is we understand that the situation is becoming more complex and more difficult, and we're looking at this as a way of helping people better understand how difficult these issues are and how much more difficult they're going to become in the future. I mean, that really is one of our underlying reasons in supporting this.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, one quick comment with regard to the confidentiality of data or proprietary nature of that. I think what would be protected clearly is health insurers, you know, bidding on some contract with prospective purchasers while those bids are in competition. I mean, otherwise, we're very used to supplying all kinds of information about what's happening to costs, and obviously there are many laws which then, from a second vantage point, govern the release of information that could be healthcare information that could be linked to an individual. That would not be necessarily the instinct here in any event. I guess the bottom line is that as representing two health insurers, we're very used to providing all kinds of information with the kinds of protections that Mr. Powell has described on all kinds of health care cost bases. After all, we are regulated by the insurance division, if in no other way. So I think it's to the extent that there are risks there, I think those are both surmountable as well as from our vantage point worth running.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I'm less concerned about, believe me, I think it's a problem, but I'm less concerned about individual issues as I am about having observed the highly competitive nature of healthcare systems and trying to figure out, will there be access to proprietary data that makes this meaningful? And I think you've answered that. But then, secondly, is this study going to draw conclusions that that competing systems might use in ways that transcended getting a baseline for use by the legislature?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that in part, you know, as Ms. Annette mentioned, the Workers' Comp Division collects a lot of information on medical costs within that system. And it's my understanding that the health plans are more than willing to provide the data as long as when the report comes out, it's not segregated by company and it's an aggregate. And I do believe that it's information that they want to be able to come up with it because it's very difficult when you have dueling actuaries. So I think that there will be cooperation. I don't think the reports would come out identifying which actor they're pointing to. It'd be more of an aggregate.
Thank you. we have to vacate this room, so Representative Butler's committee, which some of us are on, will start in a few minutes. I'd like to know if the committee's comfortable, and I also want to discuss with you a proposed budget note that Representative Hayden has proposed, and I think it's been, it has not been handed out yet. Beg your pardon. If you'd stay here and listen to the budget note and see if you have any problems with that,
and answer any questions that might be come up from the budget note. I think we have an extra one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Representative Hayden, if you'd read your budget note, and if anybody has any questions on that, and if anybody has any problem, I'd like to go into a work session, and I'll get Senator Dukes if the committee's ready to do that. Representative Hayden?
Madam Chair, this budget note has been approved by the co-chairs of Ways and Means as initialed in the upper right-hand corner, and it deals with the scope of practice issues that every legislature faces, which take up an inordinate amount of time, energy, and expense for the legislature to sort through these. If we would have an independent group such as the one we're discussing here, the Commission on Healthcare Costs, to evaluate these prior to the evaluate scope of practice requests prior to the legislative session and make a recommendation to the appropriate statutory substantive committee. I think it would save time and money in many areas and reduce a lot of stress and tension. So I submit this budget to the Chair.
Representative Johnson.
My only response to the offered budget note is this will invite a level of controversy onto this commission that perhaps the crafters of it didn't anticipate. I'm trying to sort out whether or not your study group is going to be gathering baseline data against which conclusions can be drawn, or you're going to be actually drawing the conclusions. If yours is a more academic inquiry that is simply gathering data that others will use to come to conclusions, I think the budget note is on a different subject and a different discussion for a different time. I don't disagree with Representative Hayden, but I can close my eyes and picture what the hearing room is going to look like with the nurse practitioners, the chiropractors, the naturopaths, the podiatrists. Everybody's going to be interested in having a piece of this action, and I'm afraid that this then becomes the tail wagging the dog.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I think you have accurately outlined the differences in the two goals here. I do share Representative Hayden's frustration, however. If there is any way that this budget note could be adopted with could you try this? Could some system be set up to try it? I'm not sure. I guess my only question from number one, this needs to be done. Representative Hayden is absolutely right. You walk into these hearing rooms, and then you walk back in a month later. They're still talking about who can go above the ankle bone.
Some of us lived through the chiropractic wars right in this room.
And this truly should be done to alleviate what I think is a huge drag on this process. I think what's lacking is who gets those issues and how are they delegated out? Because clearly, I don't think this group who's been designated to be on this commission alone could probably handle this. If they could, through that budget note, delegate two committees, maybe, to examine this prior to the legislature meeting, that would be fine. There have been proposals written in the past whereby groups could not introduce or legislation could not be introduced in these areas until they had gone through something like this, but that's never been forwarded and passed. So if there was a methodology of how this group could accept and delegate those studies, because I don't think this group in and of themselves would have the time to do all of that, depending on how much came. At the same time, I would do nothing here to discourage you from trying, even if this budget note had to be written in language, don't you think, can't you try, language.
Thank you, John. We're going to go into work session on this bill, Senate Joint Resolution 35. I've spoken with Legislative Fiscal Officer Deputy and we do not have a budget, so we would have to make conceptual amendments to the bill and to add this portion. And let's have a motion to do that. Representative Hayden, to your motion, or would you make a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move a conceptual amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 35 as is with the handwritten conceptual.
Okay, and let's have legislative staff read the conceptual amendment to the joint resolution so that we have that in the record.
The conceptual amendment is to add to the bill that duties of the commission shall include evaluation of scope of practice request, and a recommendation shall be made to the appropriate substantive committee at the next legislative session.
And you'll see that the words prior to, I think, on your copy is crossed out and stands as read. Any objection to the motion before us?
I don't want to be obstructionist to move Joint Resolution 35, but I think that we're talking about apples and oranges here, and I would be a no on the budget note. If you need me to move it ahead, I would do that as a courtesy, but I think we're talking about two entirely different things here.
Yes, Representative Johnson, if you would be willing to do as a courtesy...
I will to move this along, but I reiterate, this is apples and oranges.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any other objection? If not, so moved. Representative Butler?
Madam Chair, I move then Senate Joint Resolution 35 as in growth and as conceptually amended to the full committee with a due fact recommendation.
We've heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. I appreciate, pardon me, Superior, Representative Hayden in the full and the House, if you do that. And I wonder if we should have, let's see, the Speaker. The Speaker's bill and the President's Senate bill. I think probably they should carry it to the House. We'll give them an opportunity to carry it in the House. Representative Hayden will carry it in the whole. And we'll give the Speaker the opportunity to carry it in the House and the Senate President in the Senate. If not, thank you, committee members, and I'm sorry I've kind of rushed you, but I appreciate your work. We are adjourned.